Hello, hello, and welcome back to our Finding Better podcast. My name is John Suzuki, and I'm super happy you're here with me today. So this is a place where we share real life experiences and wisdom. And the idea is maybe you'll get some ideas of people who have been there and done that that you might want to apply to your own life. And, you know, we don't talk about opinions. We don't talk about theory. We don't talk about academics. It's all about real life experience, you know, and you can kind of look at it and go, whoa, you know, that's what that person, what a great idea. Anyway, we hope that you get some real cool stuff out of this. I am thrilled to have with me a gentleman who is known as Mr. Biz. And you can find him on MrBiz.com. And he runs a podcast and he's written several books. But he and I met, and he is such a wealth of experience. And, you know, we talk about everything from money to starting a new business to PTSD at work and all kinds of things. And Ken, or Mr. Biz, I call him Ken Wentworth, is just an amazing guy. And so, Ken, welcome to Finding Better. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, John, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to it. Ever since you invited me, I'm like, I'd be honored to come on. Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, the honor's mine. And listen, you have lived such a a varied life, and your career has I'm not going to go into it because I'd like you to introduce yourself. You know, I know that you have an awful lot that you can share with the world.
John, I got a lot I can share. I'm not sure. According to my daughters and my wife, maybe people don't want to hear all of it. Okay. The dad jokes. I think they're hilarious.
Jokes. We want to hear the dad jokes.
you probably experienced this with your daughter, right?
I mean, of course.
The dad jokes. I have a group text thread with like my mom, my daughters, my wife, and I'll send them. And it's like literally the only person that laughs at them is my mom. My own mom will still support me, you know, and she'll say, oh my gosh, that's a great one. Right. No, the daughters never comment. We'll get to the next time I see them, they'll be like, dad, seriously, the dad jokes. Like, come on, you know, please don't repeat those in public, you know? So,
mom's doing her job. So that's awesome.
So, lots to share, but like I said, people don't want to hear all of it. I worked at JP Morgan, you might be able to tell by the gray hair. Let's just call 20 plus years, John. We don't need to go into details. Okay. I'm a numbers guy, but we don't need to go, you know, that deep. Okay.
I'll tell you, hair coloring does wonders. I know that from experience.
There you go. And I'd always wanted to do my own thing. And I got to the point where I was in the top 3% of the company, and I was in the position to be, I was being promoted to the top 1%. And it sounds really silly, but that was a time that was kind of a bit of a epiphany is probably too strong of a word, but I realized then that like, maybe this is the time. And literally most people would say, wait, you worked your whole corporate career to get to that level. And then now you want to leave? Like that sounds very counterintuitive, but for me, really it was the realization. So I tell people all the time, John, that I am strategic to a fault. And what I mean by that is I'm always thinking, you know, 3 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out, but then I trip over the curb that's right in front of me. So that's what I mean by to a fault. And
just real quick, you know, what you do with your longer term planning is what very, very few people do, or they even know how to do, right? But the old saying, you plan your work, you work your plan. And so one of the things I share with folks is, listen, when you're thinking about your career, when you're thinking about the next step, think about the step after that.
Right.
And instead of thinking one step out, be thinking two steps out, because every step is a stepping stone. And so I get the impression that that's part of what made you successful.
I think that had a big part and plays a big part even still today, but that's exactly what I was doing, John, is, you know, that next level, fantastic, right? Huge honor and humbled by it. But I recognized also that I'm based in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. JP Morgan, obviously headquarters in New York. 1A headquarters is kind of London. And I recognized pretty quickly that more than likely within 24 to 36 months, I was going to get a lot of pressure to relocate from Columbus to either New York or London.
Sure.
And, kids were relatively young then, still had, and I just didn't want to uproot my whole family to New York or London or anything like that. If I was 25 years old and not married, I would have said, look, I'll pack my bag. Can I move tomorrow? I'll pack
you
my
bet.
Bags and new adventures and everything. But with a family, I didn't want to uproot everyone. And so that was the thing that was like, got me thinking, like, I'd always want to do my own thing. And, even coming out of undergrad, I really wanted to do my own thing. But fortunately for me, my corporate career took off pretty quickly and I got to be, elevated pretty quickly and I was making a decent amount of money. And so then the question became, okay, if I want to leave now and do something, how do I replace this income? Because I had no capital, I didn't have, I was 23, 24, 25 years old. It's like, I got to replace this income pretty quickly. How the heck do I do that? What
and
can
I
I
would
start?
Imagine that it was probably a pretty substantial income too.
Yeah. Like I said, right? I was very, very
blessed,
very fortunate that, I kind of accelerated pretty quickly. And so then it was like, well, heck, I'm just going to settle into this. And I loved it. My corporate career was fantastic. They treated me amazing. And if I wasn't there and got the experience I did there, I would never be able to do what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
100%, 1000%. So, but that's, the next time I was back up in New York, I'm talking to my boss and there's only a finite number of people who get elevated to that top 1% level every year. And no one knows what the number is. It depends how many people leave the year before and all that, right? And so I'm starting to think too, like, I don't want to take someone's place if I know I'm going to be leaving soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's fair, right? And
yeah.
So I went to my boss and I said, hey, before this all gets formalized, I'm going to leave. I'm going to resign. And he said, he got up and closed the door and he said, that's not how these conversations usually go, Ken. And I said, I understand, but that's why I wanted to kind of let you know. And I said, let me know if my interpretation is incorrect. I'm assuming, again, the expectation is I'm going to be relocating to New York or London or something like that in a relatively short term. And he said, honestly, yeah, there will be a lot of pressure on you to do that. And I said, yeah, I've always wanted to do my own thing. I think now is probably a good time for that. And he said, wow, okay. So I said, I'll stay as long as you want. I have no idea what I'm going to do next. You let me know. I just wanted to give you a heads up. I don't want to be in this pool and take a spot that someone else that deserves it could be in.
Good for you. And so you didn't wait until two weeks of your last day. You knew that this was sometime in your future. You didn't want to take somebody else's place or take away somebody else's opportunity. And you said, hey, I'll stick it. That's all, that's honorable. That's very cool. I love that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think most people, I hope most people would think that way.
Yeah.
If they were thinking out ahead a little bit, because this was, I think I talked to my boss in February or March. Everything behind the scenes was already locked in. The promotion would the new class wouldn't be announced until May. So there was a few months of lead mm-hmm. time in between. Right. And so, so they kind of scrambled. Okay. I got pulled out of the class, they figured out who was going to be in next and all that stuff. But
sure.
Yeah, I just, and they treated me amazingly on my way out as well. I mean, again, nothing negative whatsoever. And I love my corporate career. I didn't have PTSD. I mean, there were times, of course, John.
Good for you. Yeah.
There were times, right? Yeah, we all had our, challenging moments in our careers here and there, but, they treated me so well. And the person I worked for as I was leaving treated me just absolutely amazing. And, stuck around and actually stuck around longer than I wanted to in that because I was still a full-time employee. And then my replacement got hired. He came in and really, took the reins and was doing great. And my boss said, I don't want you to resign yet. I need you to hang out. So I thought, okay, there's probably some acquisition that's coming, some M&A work. They can put me in and not have to take someone else out of a full-time role. And so that'll be kind of cool, right? I'll get to do that. I love doing that kind of stuff. And it never happened. It never happened. It never happened. And so I had, at the time I had employees in six locations.
So he was just milking you.
Well, but here was the thing, John, he was milking me. I wasn't doing anything. My replacement had taken.
He just wanted
my
you to
replacement
be around.
Had taken. So I felt very guilty. I'm still collecting a paycheck and I'm not doing anything. And it got so bad that not bad, but, I had employees in six locations and one of them was Columbus. Well, I was going into the office in Columbus, and what was happening after a month or two is my employees in Columbus were coming to me into my office in Columbus and complaining to me about my replacement, that they didn't like him and he does this wrong. And I'm like,
oh boy,
you gotta give him a chance.
It's time to go.
Yeah. And so I called my guy I was working for. I said, look, this is counterproductive. Like, I don't want to be disruptive. And so I said, I'm going to come into the office Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That's it. And then it was Tuesday, Thursday. And then it was I'm just going to not come in the office, you know, because I literally had no responsibilities whatsoever at this point.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, you know, I wanted to go do my next thing. And I was, you know, I was tied to JP still.
So did you have your next thing laid out? I mean, did you know what you wanted to do? No. So how did you, because a lot of people out there are going, you know, I think I'm ready for my next thing. And what's the process that you went through?
Yeah. So great question. So a lot of people again are probably like, okay, so again, you're leaving this lucrative, you know, mm-hmm. top 1-3% job at a Fortune 15 company, and you don't know what you're going to do next. You still don't know, like, what's going on here? I was confident. I was confident that I would figure it out. Throughout my life and career, I've built up that confidence that I'll figure it out. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. Even my wife mm-hmm. was like, well, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. And she's like, okay, I'm going to trust you. But, you know, really the really changing moment for me was amazing. Was with a mentor. Again, some people were like, mentors not good. You gotta have mentors. Everyone has to have mentors. Warren Buffett has mentors.
Yeah.
Bill Gates has mentors. Everyone needs mentors, right?
And you're kind of mentoring right now.
And I mentor people. I was mentoring people in my corporate career.
Yep.
And I really enjoy it. But so I got a mentor who was much more senior than me, massively successful guy here, local in Columbus, Ohio area. And he said, this sounds really super practical and super obvious when I'm going to tell you this, John, but we were in his conference room in his office. He had this giant whiteboard that was probably 10 feet wide, one whole wall of this conference mm-hmm. room. He got all the way on the left side. He said, tell me the first job you had and three things you liked about it and three things you didn't like about it. And he drew a horizontal line all the way across, right? These are the likes, these are the dislikes. And I said, well, when I got out of college, I did. He goes, no. The first thing that you did that someone paid you for, I don't care what it was. And I said, I was mowing lawns. He said, okay, what'd you like about that? Okay, the three things, what didn't you like? What was the next thing? This is gonna age me, but my hair does anyway, John. I delivered newspapers. Okay, what'd you like about that? What didn't you like about it? So literally every single thing along the way. And then we got to my last position at JP Morgan. And he said, okay. So he takes a step back and he's like circling all the commonalities of the likes and dislikes. He said, look, this shows up in almost every job. This shows up. And he said, so we need to find you a job. So again, not thinking about positions or anything like that, think completely outside the box. We need to find your next position needs to be something where you get to do this, 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 and this, and you don't have to do this, 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 and this.
Whoa. And he got that from your timeline of going through your, wow.
So, cool. So think about that, John. I think so many people think about, you know, what's your next position? And you think about, okay, well, I could be the, and you start naming like job titles.
Right.
Well, his approach was completely different. Look, I don't care about titles. Let's figure out what you really enjoy and what you don't enjoy.
Oh, I love it.
And then let's
it.
Figure out what that fits into, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a backdoor approach. And I said, okay, well, what's that? And he said, you should be a CFO for like six or eight businesses. And I'm like, again, my whole career was in the corporate world. Me being a CFO for a business in JP Morgan was a 60 plus hour a week job. I said,
sure.
For one, yep. right? I'm yep. like, how can you do that for yep. six businesses? Am I going to clone myself? Like, how are we going to do this, right?
Yeah.
And he said, no, you do it on a fractional basis, part-time basis. You get a business. They don't need a full-time resource. They need someone who's senior, though. And it made a lot of sense to me, even though I had no experience with it, had never heard of it before. And I said, that makes a lot of sense. And John, fast forward, you know, a few months, I got my first client. It was a local client here around Columbus. And I was driving home from being on site at the client. And it was like the corny, cheesy movie moment where I'm driving and like the clouds part and the sun and you hear, you know, and it was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I know unequivocally this right now is why I'm on the face of this earth, is to be doing what I'm doing, because I absolutely loved it. And I only had one client at the time, but
wow,
it was amazing. I loved it, and I've just built upon that over the years. And again, I'm so blessed to say, like, even now, you know, someone asked me this, I get asked several times, but the first time someone asked me, this was a few years back, they said, man, it seems like, you know, you got this going on, you're writing books, you got online stuff, you got, you know, how many hours do you work a week? And I said, I have no idea. And they said, what do you mean you have no idea how many hours you work? I said, well, I don't have a schedule, like, per se. I mean, roughly, right?
Yeah.
But that's part of what's great about what I've got, the flexibility that if the kids have something going on at 3 PM, I plan my schedule around it. And at 3 PM, I'm done. Now, I might pick it back up at 9 o'clock at night and work until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
When everyone's in bed. And so that having that flexibility and not knowing. And I said, besides that, the other awesome part about it, and I'm hesitant to say this often because I think some people get taken aback by a little bit. What I do for a living now is not a job to me. And I don't mean that be corny and woo woo. And I don't mean, oh, it's a career. It's both of those things. But for me, it's more like a hobby that you enjoy. I like what I do so much that it's not like work for me. It's not like, oh my gosh, I got to go see this client or I got to go do this, because I've been able to over the, you know, since I left, 8 years ago, left JP, eight, almost nine, even whittling it in further, like these kind of things, you know, I hire someone, I delegate it, like the things that are kind of on the periphery that need to be done in my role, but I don't really want to mess with them. And so I really get to do things that I just absolutely love. And so, you know, oftentimes in the evening at home, my wife's a nurse. She gets up early. She goes to bed pretty early. Daughter goes to bed early. Our youngest is still at home, and it'll be 9 o'clock and I'm sitting on the couch and I'm like, I don't really want to watch TV. I want to go to my office because I got some juicy stuff to dig into.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So all of this, you know, going back, you know, because I'd love my listeners and watchers or whoever it is, everybody, you're living the dream. And it sounds like it kind of all started with that timeline of writing, going from left to right, everything that you loved about the three things you loved about your job, the three things you didn't, every one of them. And you found the patterns and you kept that pattern going. And I love that, Ken, because everybody can do it. Folks, you can do that too, right? Do exactly that. And you'll start seeing patterns. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. So now, are you still doing the CFO stuff? Because I want to evolve into what you're doing with your podcast and that stuff. So how did that all work?
Yeah. So it started off with, I was doing just one-on-one consulting, fractional CFO part, you know, kind of strategic partner. I'm still doing that. I absolutely love it. I've also got an online course. I've got a continuity program, like a membership program. Try to have different, you know, as the businesses evolved. So I did the one-on-one stuff. And then it was like, well, I found people that needed help, but couldn't afford that. So, well, how can I help those people? And so, well, let's make a course and let's go hire a media company.
Yeah.
And then that, okay, some people can't afford that or they don't want to do that. Well, what's kind of a hybrid of both of those? So then we created the membership thing, a continuity thing. And then, you know, in the midst of writing some books and then got into doing the radio show, podcast. And that's just, a lot of people think, oh, well, you're a host of Mr. Biz Radio. And I'm like, that's like, you know, I don't know, 5% of what I do. I enjoy it. And I've been doing it for over 7 years now. I love it. And I get to meet really cool people like yourself. And so I learn a ton from it. So selfishly, you know, and I think based on the success of the show, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people are getting a lot of value out of it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's talk about some things that you talk about, because this is all about learning, all about experience. One of the things, Mr. Biz, okay, it's about business. And I'm wearing my green Aloha shirt. Kind of the subliminal message is money. I have several podcast episodes about finding better money and talking about some of the basics, starting off with the real basics of, you know, the rules about money and kind of the mindset. And I know you talk about that a lot. You talk about making money. So what is there anything that you can, and any experience, any words of wisdom that you can, as people are trying to figure out, you know, I often say that wealth isn't based on how much you make, it's based on how much you keep.
Absolutely.
And you know, changing some of that thinking that, you know, and I talk about The Millionaire Next Door, which you probably know, this book that was back in the 70s, where it said 80% of the people who look like millionaires are dead broke. And 80% of the true millionaires, you couldn't pick them out in a lineup.
Right.
And so what have you learned? I mean, you've gone through a lot as you've evolved. And what have you learned about that folks can learn from?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, so I grew up in a small town, steel mill town, complete blue collar.
Mm-hmm.
My dad worked in a steel mill, my grandfather, my uncles, pretty much everyone I knew. If you were a male in that area, for the most part, you worked in a steel mill, you worked there for whatever, 40 years, and you retired with a decent pension, and you know, you did okay. And, you know, so I think as a little kid, you kind of think, well, I want to do what my dad does, right?
Sure.
And my dad, God bless him that he did this. When I was, I think, in eighth grade, so I did really well academically and things like that. And I kept saying, I want to work in a mill like you. And my dad was like, you don't want to work in a mill.
Mm.
And he told me back then, you want to work with your brain, not your back, if you can.
Right, right.
And he took me, he snuck me into the mill when I was, again, probably seventh or eighth grade. I'm sure he took me to the most unsavory parts, right? The most terrible parts to work in, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm seeing this crazy stuff, this crazy, like, hard, hard labor going on. And my dad's like, you see that? Do
kind
you
of
want
a,
to do that for 40
kind of a
years?
Scared straight experience in the steel.
Exactly. And he said, you know what? That job, when you're in your 20s, it's kind of cool. And you're getting some exercise and you're staying in shape. When you're 30s and... and you get to your 40s after doing it for 20 years, you start to have back problems and neck, you know, whatever. And then you're in your 50s, well, you still got another 15 years to go. Like, you know, and he said, you don't want to do that. So that was a big thing for me. But really growing up in that blue collar sort of mindset of everyone, I was the first person in my family to go to college. I mean, no one had ever gone. And, you know, even then my dad told me, I think my sophomore year, I think it was freshman or sophomore, I took the pre-SAT and I scored like super high and all that stuff. And I started getting letters from colleges back then. And, you know, again, no one in my family had ever gone to college. So, you know, we're getting these, you know, all this college stuff. And my dad's looking through and seeing how expensive college is. And my dad literally went late one night. He said, look, man, I want you to be able to go to college, but I don't see how we're going to be able to afford it. Like, I want to do it. And so again, I didn't even know anything about money back then. I didn't know how much my parents made. I had no idea. And I'm getting to kind of how I grew up and sort of the mindset of all of this stuff. So when I went to, I told my dad, I said, I'll figure it out. And I did figure it out. And I'm going, of course, but I remember this. So when I filled out my financial aid form, my junior year of high school for, I guess between junior and senior year, right, for my freshman year of college, our household income, so I have a brother, so there's four of us, our family made $26,000. And so, again, it was a long time ago, but still, it's $26,000 for four people. And the school I went to, the first year I went there, again, long time ago, was private school, and tuition, room and board was $13,000. And so then it really started to hit me, like, no wonder my dad, you know, the $26,000 was gross, right? That's pre-tax, right?
Yep.
So what are they, you know, what's the net out of all that? So my dad's like, this is, you know, 3/4, 2/3 of a year of my wages.
Right.
I can't, you know, and so it started to hit me back, you know, then and then, but growing up in that mentality of everything was like sort of, there was no thought of abundance whatsoever. It was kind of paycheck to paycheck.
All get about by. Scarcity. Yep.
Yeah. And my dad was, he was thinking ahead and he had bought stock and he had done some different things, but and I think I, you know, based on the money that was made and some of the things that were set up, my dad ended up passing away or whatever. But then when that happened, I was helping my mom with a lot of the financial stuff and seeing what he had socked away and everything was like pretty amazing based on the money he had made. So I'm like, was he Robert Kiyosaki, like before Robert Kiyosaki? But that mentality, I had to change that when I got out of school of thinking differently. And I didn't right away because, again, my idea when I left my undergrad was I want to get a job at a place where I can work for 40 years and retire. And how often does that happen in the corporate world, especially
anymore.
Now?
Anymore. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I grew up with that exact same mentality. It ain't there anymore.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of it is just making sure, you know, a lot of the basic things you hear all the time, but, you know, managing your debt and making sure you don't have, you're not taking on a lot of unnecessary debt. And really, one of the biggest things, and I think, you know, you touched on a little bit, John, is one of the biggest things I see mistakes that young people make is they get out of school and they, you know, in college or even just, you know, getting a job or whatever. And they're like, I deserve a new car.
Yep.
And they don't want to drive a used car that's 6 years old. They want to drive some fancy, shiny new red sports car or whatever, fill in the blank. And they get in them. That's a depreciating asset. I'm not trying to get too, you know, old guy on my soapbox here, but that's a depreciating asset.
Meaning the value of it goes down.
Yeah.
Unless you're buying antique cars. Yeah.
Right. And so, well, you put $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 down to make sure your payment's not too high. So then you pay this payment. And then at the end of whatever, 2 or 3 years, you're gonna start all over again. You got to come up with another $5,000. And, you know, maybe in your early 20s, you know, you just don't have $5,000 laying around, or maybe you have $5,000, but that's going to zap you to zero, right? And then you have no asset to show for it, nothing whatsoever. So you probably need a car, depending where you live. You probably need a vehicle. Go buy a 5-year-old car or buy a 6-year-old car. Like, look, I'll tell you this, John. I almost wear this as a badge of honor. I literally, just 2 years ago, I bought a used Honda. I love Hondas, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll drive Hondas probably till day I die.
I'm the same way about Toyotas.
it doesn't matter how much money I make or whatever. People make fun of me all the time. I'm like, hey man, my track record is amazing, right? I bought a Honda Passport. It was like a year and a half old, had like 10,000 miles on it. I drove it for 15 years. literally, and I love that vehicle so much. I literally, my brother-in-law bought it from me because I literally wanted to keep it in the family. He needed an old work vehicle. I'm like, hey, here you go, man. This thing's been taken care of. It's awesome. Had low miles on it for the age. And literally my wife was coming to me because my wife was driving a Mercedes-Benz. And so people were like, oh, your husband's driving this old Honda. And it's not beat up. It wasn't rusted or anything like that. It was still in really great shape, right? It wasn't like I was driving some clunker, but people are like, oh, it must be nice. You're driving around a Benz and your husband's driving this old this old Honda. She's like, I told him 100 times to go get a new vehicle. But I think going back to that upbringing there's nothing wrong with it. I don't need to get rid of it. I love it. I didn't see any vehicles that I really wanted that I liked a lot more than it. I don't need it. You know, I paid cash for it when I bought it. So I had no payment, you know, whatever. And so it's like, I don't need a new car. Like, this thing's awesome. I love it. I don't dislike driving it. That being said, I will admit this is a little bit funny, John, but side note to that story. I had a meeting with a potential client here locally in town. He invited me to a country club here in town and to meet him for lunch. And I was like, I can't. And I knew that they had valet parking. I'm like, I can't pull up in a 12-year-old Honda Passport. So I told my wife, I go, can you take my car to work today and I'll drive yours? Just so I know that sounds a little bad, but I thought I don't want to get off on the wrong foot right off the bat, you know? So I guess I was playing into that image thing a little bit, but it wasn't like I went out and rented it or something.
Well,
you know,
there's a certain, you know, this reminds me of a book that I know, you know, John T. Malloy's Dress for Success, right?
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with high-end clients and you're dealing, you know, you need to play that part. And so I get it. I get it. I get that you don't want to come up on a 15, you know, when you're dealing with the kinds of clients and people that you were dealing with. So, but at the same time, I too am a person who keeps his cars for 15 to 18 years. And, you know, because I think back on how much money I wouldn't have today.
Yes.
Especially when you factor in the time value of money and a return every year. And it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely.
Yep. And you know, it's hard. It's harder today, I think, for young people to understand that, because, you know, you and I grew up in a world of frugality. And, you know, with social media these days and everybody with, look at me, you're a loser if you don't look at me. or you don't live like me. And it's just so out there. It's so, so hard. And people behave by, like the people they hang out with. And it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so, you know, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, somehow we got to break the pattern, you know, for some folks who want the pattern to be broken. And it's a huge part. Cars is it's the second most expensive thing you're going to spend in your life. Actually, you're third, because the first is taxes. But your discretionary income is going to be your house and your car. So listen, one other quickie. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things that I talk about is, you know, when it comes to money and personal finances, you know, everybody is finding themselves, or not everybody, but a whole lot of people are finding themselves with more month at the end of the money. And you know, one of the things I advocate is starting a side business, you know, especially in today's world with the gig economy. And my mm-hmm. goodness, there are opportunities out there that you and I never dreamed of. And so as you think back on what kind of a mindset can people have? I mean, one of the things that I've learned about you is that you go with the flow, right? You see something, you're going down the road, and you go, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here where these people who can't afford my services, maybe I can put something together for them. And then you're just kind of evolving as you go. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is that if people can have that, set that kind of a mindset and do that, it would serve them, because learning is cumulative. But what did you do to get over the fear factor?
I think, again, I mentioned this way earlier in the show, but it was just the accumulation, I think, of successes built my confidence. And it doesn't have to be some monumental success. It doesn't have to be that you climbed, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro. It successes can be measured in many different ways. And, one thing, Jesse Itzler, I love Jesse Itzler. And I've been following him on social media and everything for a few years. I had the good fortune of meeting him and talking with him a few different times. And mm-hmm. one of the things he talks about that I absolutely love, because everyone's heard the saying, success breeds success.
Absolutely.
And again, someone goes, well, maybe you're stuck in a job you don't like, and you've got some troubled relationships. You're like, man, I got all this negativity, all this negative stuff. And what Jesse talks about is, he said, you know what I do? I plan my day the night before, and I automatically set myself up for 3 to 5 successes in the morning. So in the first 2 hours before, and I'm out of bed, I have 3 to 5 successes. Now, what success can you have that early in the morning, right? Well, they're little things. But you know what? Sometimes I sleep in on Saturdays until 9 o'clock. You know what? This Saturday, I'm going to get some stuff done. My butt's going to get up at 7 a.m. You get up at 7 a.m. There's success number one. You already did that, right?
I woke up.
And I also, and so he'll do the same thing. And so I also heard Ed Milet. He's another kind of influencer type guy or whatever, but pretty successful. But one of the things he talked about is, he said, the primary way to build self-confidence is to keep the promises you make to yourself.
Oh.
Because, and I thought that was the same thing. I had the same reaction, John, when I heard it.
Yeah.
I thought, man, that sounds so simple, but I'd never thought of that. And he said, you know, when you tell yourself at night, you know what, I'm going to get up and go to the gym in the morning. And then you hit the snooze button 4 times, and then you get up and you don't go to the gym. What is your self-thought then? You lazy
loser.
Bump.
Yeah.
How come you didn't get up?
Yeah.
Yep, there's another one. You said you're going to go 2 days ago. You didn't go then either. So keeping promises you make to yourself, and if you think about it, it makes all the sense in the world. And so I started to really start to be self-aware of that with myself, and even start to think about that, it's so true, because I get so frustrated with myself when I don't, you know, do something that I say I was going to do, even just to myself, because I'm always really overtly trying to make sure that I never tell someone I'm going to do something I don't do to someone mm-hmm. else. But who do we let down the most? More than likely ourselves, right?
Ourselves.
Because you don't want to let other people down.
Yep.
And so when you do that, it brings in that negativity, and it brings in that negative self-talk to say, oh, here we go again. Yeah. How do you think you're going to lose that 20 pounds,
amazing.
Ken? Because you're not going to the gym. And what'd you have for lunch? You said you're going to eat a salad, and you ate a burger or whatever.
I love that. life lessons, life lessons. And, you know, folks, give yourself the opportunities to succeed every day. Right. And Ken, it is, you know, people, you know, sometimes people foo-foo the idea of self-talk and the importance of self-talk. But, you know, I mean, when you wake up in the morning and say the things like you said, like you shared, like, oh gosh, you know, I'm lazy and I didn't get that done. You know, give yourself, you know, some examples of brush your teeth, make your bed, you know, and give yourself that opportunity to, I love that. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Ken.
I'm sorry, John, I'm going to cut you off. One of the things I want to mention too, is that I'm going to mix back to Jesse Itzler. If you do hit the snooze button, when you tell yourself you're going to get up, don't beat yourself up. So what Jesse said, and this was another thing that I thought was, again, very practical, but very, so simple.
Yeah.
And so easy to, he sets weekly goals. He doesn't set daily goals. He said, yeah, I break my week down into days, but if I'm supposed to work out on Monday and something happens and my kid gets sick and I got to take care of my kid and I don't get to go to the gym, I don't say, oh, you didn't go to the gym today. I say, well, I wasn't going to work out on Tuesday. Now I'm going to move my Monday workout to Tuesday. I'm still going to accomplish my goals for the week. So when you do have those moments, because we all have them, you'll have those days where you're like, blah, I don't feel like doing anything today. Don't worry about it. Shift it and double down for the rest of the week, right? I got till Sunday to do,
there you go.
I want to run, you know, I don't know, 20 miles this week. And I skipped out on the 3 miles today. Well, I'm going to add those 3 miles to my runs the rest of the week. I'm still going to get there. So that's another way to not start to have that self-negative talk, even when life happens, because life is going to happen. There's going to be chaos. There's going to be things that preempt your goals now and again, but that's another way to think about it, to avoid some of that, you know, oh my gosh, I didn't do what I said I was going to do.
Yeah.
What I promised myself I would do.
Yeah. It's all about building yourself. It's all about building yourself. Right. And I love that, Ken, because it's so basic, but it's so important, because if you don't have the confidence in yourself, and if you don't have the belief in yourself that you can do something new, you're not going to try. You know, it's that fear factor is just going to take over. And then, you know, as you guys are thinking about this, do what Ken's mentor did with him, right? Think about the things, that timeline of your life, and start and pull out those things that you loved and the things that you didn't like, and go for the love and leave the other stuff behind.
I mean, John, it's such a simple example. Yeah, it's such a simple example of, and it's an extreme example, so I'll use it so it's really illustrative. But, you know, if you're a very introverted person and you don't like being around people, let's say.
Right.
Don't take a job where you have to deal with people every day. Just because it pays a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be miserable, and you than likely will do very poorly at that job, which will zap your self-confidence. And then now where are you, right? And it goes back to what I mentioned before. When I took that leap from the corporate world, you know, a lot of people were like, what are you doing? And I said, I'll figure it out. I had the confidence because I had done, unknowingly at the time, enough of those things that built my confidence over time to say, I don't know, but I know that I'll be able to figure it out. One way or another, I'll figure it out, because in my head, I always do. I failed? I failed a bazillion times.
That's right.
But I've had enough successes, and even internally, to celebrate those. You know, I'll get out of, this is going to sound really silly, but this is an example of, I'm being very vulnerable here, John, but I'll get out of a client meeting and I'll be in my car driving to my next meeting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, I'll talk to myself. I'll be like, that meeting was amazing. We just killed it. We are on a roll. We are killing it today.
I love it.
It's just that little quick thing, right? And people were sitting next to me in traffic like, is he on the phone? Like, who's he talking to, right?
Yeah.
But
that's awesome.
And it sounds so cheesy and corny, but I'm telling you, at least for me, it's very impactful, because now all of a sudden you're looking for more of that, right? Just like the whole thing, like, if you look for purple cars, all of a sudden you're like, I didn't realize there's so many purple cars around, right?
That's it.
And so if you're looking for, I'm kicking butt today, you're going to find reasons for that. If you're looking for, I'm lazy, I don't get stuff done, oh, I left that
undone,
you're going to find more of that. You're going to find, oh, this jerk pulled out in front of me. What? My day is terrible. You know, I said this to my daughters a long time ago. They were young. We're getting ready for school. They're in a rush. And my one daughter's tying her tennis shoes and she breaks her shoelace. And you would have thought that you know,
the world ended.
The world ended, right? And I told her, I said, you know what? I said, just get another pair of shoes, right? You don't got to wear shoes you want rather than try to get new lace on. But guess what? If that's the worst thing that happens to you today, you're going to have an amazing day.
Yeah, no kidding.
You got to put those things in perspective.
Yeah. There's so much to that. There's so much. Wow. You know, this is one of those conversations that I'm going to rewind and listen to again, because there's so much wonderful, wonderful learning. And the best part is that it's learning that people can apply to their own lives and as they look for better in their lives. So folks, you know, really take this stuff to heart, right? A lot of these things have worked for Ken and a lot of work for me. So Mr. Biz, if folks want to learn more about what you do, where do they go?
Yeah, the easiest place is just go to MrBiz.com. Easy for me to say. It's got all the stuff we got going on out there, whether the radio show or all the other different things we got going on. But yeah, definitely check it out. And here's the other thing. And I'm not just saying this as a cheap plug, but follow me on social media, get on my YouTube channel. And I only say that not because, oh my gosh, give me a follow or whatever. I put free stuff out all the time, all the time. Go out to my YouTube channel. If there's something in particular with your business or mindset or something like that, we've got playlists. So you don't have to like sift through hundreds of videos to find the one Wonderful. That applies to what you're trying to do. And you can go out there and say, I need some motivation. I need some discipline. What do I do? Well, go to that playlist and, you know, listen to a couple of those videos. Most of them are pretty short, and consume that stuff for free. There's a lot of information out there that's so free. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I've been able to find enough things that work and work for me. And, you know, as I mentor folks and work for them as well. So, you know, take advantage of that stuff. There's, again, so much free information that's out there.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. And so with that, folks, you know what, let's keep at it. Just keep at it. And, you know, we talked about a lot of things that I just love. I'm not going to rewind this whole thing and summarize it, but, Ken, Mr. Biz, and again, that's MrBiz.com, MrBiz.com. Thank you so much. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing. Isn't it amazing? You know, that we can share, people can learn so much. I'm amazed at how much I have learned just by listening to stories of your life. Right. You have an open invitation to come back anytime.
I appreciate that, John. Like you said, it was an honor to be on. I really appreciate it. Great conversation. I learned a bunch from you from our previous conversations when you come on Mr. Biz Radio. So I really appreciate it. It's always great to talk to like-minded people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're here for you, folks. So God bless you, and keep going until next time. Thanks.